from the campus of New Hope Christian College, welcome to Words of New Hope.
My dad, he was such a disciplinarian. He disciplined in the patriotic style because he was in the Army. He laid down stripes, we saw stars. My dad just takes out a belt. I start crying. I remember once my dad was about to spank me and I started crying. I heard him laughing. And I turned around and what? He said, I haven't even hit you and you're already crying.
Aloha and welcome to Words of New Hope, coming your way from New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu, pastored by Dr. Wayne Cordero. We've all been through it at one time or another, those seasons of your life where you feel absolutely helpless. Everything is spinning out of control. You're juggling 25 different objects, and if you drop one, they'll all come tumbling down. Well, today, Pastor Wayne will show us that Moses felt that way as he was leading the Israelites through the wilderness. You may be feeling that way right now. Take courage, my friend. Help is on the way. Here is Pastor Wayne with a message entitled, When You Feel Absolutely Helpless.
Would you take out your notes with me as we talk about something I think we'll all go through. When you feel absolutely helpless. Now, how many of you would be honest enough to say, I've gone through that quite a few times. I feel helpless sometimes, yeah. Some of the guys might say, yeah, that started the day I said, I do, when I got married. I was out of control after that. To those guys, I say, with those just two words, you felt out of control and helpless. Yeah. Just have two more words that'll help you gain control. What are those? Yes, dear. It's like the guy that said, hey, last time, man, I had my wife on her knees talking to me. Really, his friend said, what'd she say? She said, come out from under that bed and fight like a man. Ever feel helpless? I remember the time that I think I felt the most helpless. I was a young pastor in Hilo. After services on Sunday, I was at home and I thought, man, I got stuff to do at the office. And the Lord said, just stay home. I just felt that prompting. You know how you just kind of like veto God's promptings, like, ah, and you go anyway. Well, I went to the office and we had rented this old teeny little house. And it had these old sliding windows, no air conditioning. So it was hot and wet, you know, in Hilo. And so I wanted to open the windows. Now, one of the things, because of the moisture in Hilo, it sometimes swells the wood on these old houses. And the windows slide up and down. And so there's a vertical window, two, one on top, one on the bottom. And you can slide, and they're just right next to each other. And so I tried to open the bottom one to get some air, and I couldn't get that thing unstuck. So I put a chair up next to it so I could grab it like this and pull it. So I was right next to this window here and the other window's up here. And I'm looking out over the street and I grabbed this thing and I got a good hold of the sill and I yanked it. And when I did, the top window came screaming down, whap, and caught both of my hands in the window and just wedged them. Just the weight of the window, bang. Oh! And I couldn't do a thing. Both hands were wedged in the window. Oh! And it was, I mean, my fingers were flat, and I thought I'd broken all of them. And the pain was excruciating. You just don't know the pain. I tell my wife that. She says, oh, no, you don't know pain. You never gave birth to children. I said, honey, I gave birth to triplets that day. And one was breech. Oh, man. Let me tell you. My hands were stuck in the sills, and you could see your fingers through the window, you know, and the tips. Let me tell you how much pressure was on my fingers. Blood was dripping out of my fingernails. And, I couldn't move. And, you know, you just, and I wanted to break, but every time I pulled, I was going to break the window with my knee, and I thought I'd just slice my fingers up in the glass, so I just didn't know what to do, and I'm just, why didn't I stay home? And you just come to the point where you just, I mean, the thing in my mind was saying, I was thinking this in my mind, I got to wait till 8 o'clock tomorrow morning before the secretary comes in, because I can't reach the phone, there's nothing you can do. You're stuck. So I just put my head out the window. Help! Yelling at anybody. I could just see people driving by and saying to their kid, look that crazy man, look that crazy man. You know, till this day, I know it was just God that helped me, but this sounds really crazy and unbelievable. But the only thing I had to use was my teeth. So I actually reached down, grabbed the outer sill with my teeth, and pull it up just enough to release my hands. And man, when they came out, they were flat. I looked like Edward Scissorhands. Oh, I tell you, it was amazing. I've never felt so helpless in my life. But I was reading recently of Moses and the people of Israel, and I found that they felt the same way. The people of Israel had just gotten released from Egypt after several plagues, 10 to be exact, where Pharaoh had constantly hardened his heart again after God removed the plague. But finally, they were let go. And now nearly 2 million people, because you figure there's 600,000 warrior men. That's probably from ages 20 to about 50 or so. 600,000 of those, but you add in children, elderly, women, you're looking at about 2 million people going into a hot, arid desert. 3 days they go into the desert, and they're without water. So you're having dehydration problems. Cattle are probably struggling. Kids, of course, are crying. 2 million people now. And the complaints start to rise in this huge mass of humanity. And then they, with just hardly any hope left, they finally reach a lake. And they think, that's it, we've got it. We've held out this long, we're about ready to die. And they get to a lake, and the lake is toxic. It can't be, water can't be drunk. Is that what you call it, drunk? Could not be drunk? No, you don't get drunk, no. Could not be drank. Okay. No can drink the water. It's easier just to speak pidgin, yeah? Never could drink water, so. So they are just completely helpless. They're going to die. They're done. Have you ever had that where you're setting your hope on something and you get closer and closer to this hope and then the hope vanishes? You think, everything I gave for this hope, and now the hope is gone, and you're absolutely helpless. I remember some years ago, Anna and I, with some church people, were camping down at South Point. I don't know if you know where that is on the Big Island. And we had some tents, and some of the high school kids were there. One high school kid comes out of the water, takes his mask off, and says, "Hey, Pastor Wayne, I found out where there's choke mempachi." You know what mempachi is? A red fish, and the eyes are kind of, you know, buggy eyes. And he said, "I found choke mempachi and slipper lobster. It's in this cave. Come." First mistake. I said, "Okay." Now, we don't go with tanks. It's just mask, and you just go. Now, you're in these lava tubes in these caves. And I said, where are we going to get air? He said, "Oh, no, there's this air pocket in there. But you got to take a deep breath to get there." I was so stupid. I said, "Okay, let's go." So I put on the mask, take a couple deep breaths, get our spears, and we just start swimming. And we go down through this hole. And it's scary. I'm thinking, what if there's like, we come face to face with Mako shark? You know, which one is going to leave? Neither, because he'll eat us and keep right on going. And so we're just swimming and swimming and swimming. Finally, my lungs are burning and I can't handle it anymore. And finally, so we go up and I see some light. We get to the pocket of air, and it was real pretty. It was a cave. And so we sat on the ledge, and he said, "Okay." I said, "Well, where's the lobster?" He said, "Oh, no, it's this next one. You got to go a little bit more." "What do you mean a little bit more?" "Oh yeah, this one's a little farther, so you gotta really take a deep breath." I said, "What do you mean? This one took us like 30, 40 seconds to get here. I'm out of breath." He said, "Yeah, this one's about, maybe about 45 seconds, 50 seconds. Just really take a deep breath." I thought, "Oh, second mistake." "Okay." He said, "Yeah, but that's where it is." So we do a hyperventilation thing. Ready? And we go under, and we just start swimming and swimming and swimming, and it's dark and light and dark and light, and I can't breathe anymore. I mean, I just can't take it anymore. My lungs are burning. My eyeballs are popping out like a mempachi eyeball. So finally, so we start going up. You know when you're going up, you think, "Oh, praise the Lord." So you start letting out air. He's up in front of me, and then his eyes look real big. He looks back at me. I thought, "Oh, no." the hope you had has vanished. Now you got to go back. We drop our spears because we're just cranking. And you could just hear us underneath moaning. And you know how you have an instinct to go up for air. So I'm just hitting the top of this lava tube because you're instinctively trying to get up for air. And my back is getting ripped to shreds. And now till this day, I do not know how I got back to the first cave. I started kind of blacking out. I just know my angel, God said, go down, help that boy. I bet he just went down and grabbed me. Get out of here. Yeah. I know, man. When I go to heaven, my angel's gonna come, he's gonna slap me. You know how hard you made me for work down there? Till this day, I am convinced, because I have no idea. It was a blackout until we just came up again. And I thought, oh man, I learned a big lesson that day. Never trust high school kids. Oh, but you know, that happens when you have your hopes set on something and you just make it just barely to that. And when you get there, poof, that hope vanishes and you feel absolutely helpless. I bet you multiply that by about 10 and that's how the people of Israel felt. 3 days in the wilderness, just hoping for that lake of water. And when they get there, it's useless. They're absolutely helpless. Now, we're going to find two responses, one from the people and one from Moses. But before we open the curtain to that, let's take a look at what it says here in Exodus 15. We're going to walk through a few verses in the story of Moses in Exodus. Let's read it together, 15, 22, and 23. Go. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters, for they were... Yeah, we come to places we call Marah in our lives, or bitter, or possible bitterness, undrinkable, setting our hope on something and bitterly disappointed. That's the word Marah. And we come to those places in our lives too, because this isn't just an event in history. It holds for us poignant life lessons for today. But before we talk about the lessons that you can learn when you come to a point where you're absolutely helpless, before we do that, let me bring us to a couple of realizations. Because coming to a point of helplessness isn't always that bad. You can extract some things out of it that really will help us with life. And the first is this. You know, I look back on the times where I felt absolutely helpless, and you know what it's helped me to see? The first is this. Would you write it down in the first bullet? It helps us realize that we need God. Oh, man. You see, if you never come to those points in your life, you think you're invincible. You think you're just ever youthful. You always have energy and health. And all of a sudden, bang, you get nailed. And you realize, man, do I need God. It's these moments in life that I look back on now that God used in my life to protect me from becoming foolish. Because when I think I'm indestructible, I'm about that far away from being an utter, full-fledged, full-service fool. That's right. Because when you think you don't need God, you're about ready to fall over the edge and to be seen as foolish. For that's what Psalm 53 and verse 1 says. Let's read it together. Go. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Yeah, and I look back on those moments and I think, you know, those moments, as much as I hate them, those moments kept me, I bet, from being a full-fledged fool. It stopped me and I realized, man, do I need God. There is a God. For without Him, I am dead. I am absolutely finished. It kept me going. And when you think you're indestructible, you're just real close to being foolish. I remember years ago, Helen Reddy sang a song, I am strong, I am invincible, I am woman. I thought, that's nuts, man. I am strong, this is how she should sing. I am invincible, I'm one idiot. Because when you think you're just indestructible, you're about that far from being a fool. When you think there is no God. Because what'll happen is you'll realize how finite and frail you are when you hit a wall. Because it brings us to the second realization. Would you write it in the next bullet? It brings us to moments of decision. Moments of decision about God, about our lives, about our own frailty, our humanity, our finiteness. That happened with the prodigal son. Do you remember? He got his father's inheritance. He got some money. And he said, I am strong. I am invincible. And he went out thinking, this will solve and cure all my problems. And in short order, that stuff vanished. And he found himself stealing away in a pig pen at a farm, eating the stuff the pigs were eating because that's the only thing he could get and it was free. And then he came in this point of helplessness. He came to his senses or a moment of decision. And let's read what he said. Let's read that. Go. But when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread? But I am dying here with hunger. Yeah, here I am, helpless, in abject helplessness, powerlessness. I'm dying in hunger. And then all of a sudden, bing, what am I doing? You see, sometimes there's so much worldly, fleshly, personal overgrowth in life that in order for us to see heaven, God has to clean the slates. Just clear everything away. You got nothing left. And then you see heaven for the first time, maybe. There's moments of decision that take place. In fact, there's some of you here, you're saying, man, you're singing my song. That's my story. Yeah. And God may be just clearing the field, cleaning the runway so that you can see heaven. And moments of decision take place at times just like this, when there's a reality of life, it's a reality check. That's it. So I want you to know right up front that moments of helplessness, when you realize how finite you are, it brings you back to reality. And without those, we might be singing, I am strong. And we realize how foolish that is. So the first is, realize that there's going to be moments of helplessness, and they're not necessarily evil or wrong. It just may be God's teaching us something. Will you feel powerless? Absolutely. Oh, I tell you, is it a fun feeling? No. So what do you do when you have moments where you just feel absolutely helpless? Well, let's take a look again at Moses and the people. They arrive at this place called Marah, where it's just bitter. A bitter disappointment is what it is. And it's that word marah, that is bitter or bitter disappointment. And that's what they named that lake. So they're at the end of their rope, hope upon hope that this would give them water. That hope vanishes. They're done. They're going to die in the wilderness. And they begin to say, hey, what'd you do? You brought us out here? You brought us out here to die in the wilderness, huh? And the people just kind of had still a obstinate spirit. But here's the first lesson that I have found. You'll see two responses that'll come from the people and Moses, and they're so different. But here's the first lesson that we're going to learn. When you feel absolutely helpless, here's the first thing. Number one, when you feel absolutely helpless, don't hold out. Instead, cry out. Would you write that? And cry out to God. Let him clear the slates. Let him extract every bit of you out. And cry out to God. Because you'll see two responses. Let's read the scripture and you'll see the two. Go. So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Then he cried out to the Lord. Would you underline the people grumbled and then underline what Moses did? He cried out. See the difference? Oh, it's easy to hold out on God just to start grumbling. Why is this? How come? Look. Oh, man. And we can drink from Marah. And how many people do? They go there, and that's it. And they just drink bitterness. That bitter disappointment enters them. But Moses fell on his knees and cried out to the Lord. Don't hold out, because it'll cause you to drink of bitterness. Instead, cry out, and something will happen. Two hugely different responses. You've seen kids that hold out, you know, when their parents like are disciplining them. Have you seen kids that just, whacker, man. I remember my dad, he was such a disciplinarian. He kind of, you know, disciplined in the patriotic style because he was in the army. He laid down stripes. We saw stars. And he'd whack. And if I'd hold out with a belt, pack, you know, pack, he would switch like to a whip. whack, whack. And if I still held out, he'd like take out a chain or a cable or something, you know, and start whacking us until, man, we just kind of broke down. And I started getting smarter. When my dad just takes out a belt, I start crying. Smarter. I remember once my dad was about to spank me and I started crying. And I heard him laughing. And I turned around and I said, what? He said, I haven't even hit you and you're already crying. Smart at me. Don't hold out. Cry out. In fact, let's read what Psalm 107 says. Let's read it. Go. They cried out to the Lord in their trouble. The result? He delivered them out of their distresses. Yeah. Yeah, you see, he said, but Wayne, if you just cry out, it's like not doing anything for the problem. Then why you just cry out? Because sometimes when you cry out, you realize that you're at the end of your helpfulness and power. And you give it over to the Lord. And that's why Paul the Apostle says in 1 Corinthians 12, you know what? Therefore, I'm well content with my weaknesses and my frailty and my distresses, because when I am weak, I am strong. In other words, it's then that his power is tapped into when I deplete my own. And I don't get to tap into his power until mine is depleted. You can hold out or you can cry out. Huge difference in whose power you're tapping into for the situation. And the children of Israel hold out, held out, held out. That's why after 40 years, they all died in the wilderness. Moses cried out to God. And God is about to do a great miracle. Some people say, well, Wayne, sometimes I feel so helpless. All I can do is cry. Sometimes you just need to go to the beach somewhere, go up to the mountain, somewhere where you're alone, and just cry out to God for your family. Cry out to God for your marriage. Cry out to God for your future, your finances. And God hears. Heaven's ear is open to the cries of God's people. Not to those that hold out, because then you're continually tapping into your own power. And you don't really move into his until you deplete yours. That's why John the Baptist prayed, oh Lord, may I decrease that you might increase. Yeah. So cry out. This one lady from the church wrote me a letter and she said, Wayne, there's so much injustice at where I am and there's problems and this going down and that's going down is wrong, is bad. And I feel so helpless. What do I do? Sometimes I just get mad at God because there's nothing I can do in my position. There's nothing I can do because the powers that be are doing certain things. There's nothing I feel helpless. And what a terrible feeling. I wrote back to her and I said, you can weep and you can sigh. She said, now that is the lamest thing I heard. I said, well, it might sound lame, but in heaven's records, it is extremely powerful. And I quoted her something out of Ezekiel. You see, in Ezekiel, there's a lot of sin and injustice that was taking place in Jerusalem. And people began to cry out to God. And you know what God did? He sent an angel. And he said, I want you to now go ahead and release the consequences to the injustices that's taking place. But there's some good people among them. And they need to be protected from the death that's going to come because of the injustice. So this is what I want you to do, he said to the angel. Really interesting. He said, I want you to go down and put some kind of mark, as it were, a covering on all of those who sigh and weep and groan. And all the rest, kill them. And what? Yeah, what he's saying is he's not issuing a death threat. He's just saying there's going to be consequences that come from the sin and an injustice. Protect those who sigh and weep over injustice, even though they don't think they can do anything. That's exactly what it says. Let's read the scripture and you'll see. Go ahead. He said to them, walk through the streets of Jerusalem and put a mark on the foreheads of all those who weep and sigh because of the sins they see around. And kill everyone whose forehead is not marked. Pretty powerful statement. Now, it seems like God is the one acting on this, but what it really means is there's consequences because of the injustices, because the wages of sin is death. But I want you to protect these who weep and sigh because of what's going on in society. Though they feel helpless to do anything about it, their role is not necessarily to correct it. Their role is to weep and sigh and to keep their hearts keep their hearts clean and pure, compassionate in the midst of it. And sometimes hearts of compassion, the only thing you can do is sigh and groan and weep. And the Lord says, I detect that all the way from heaven, and I'll protect you.
You've just heard part one of a message entitled, When You Feel Absolutely Helpless, by Pastor Wayne Cordero of New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu. Until next time, for Pastor Wayne Cordero, this is Dale Gibbs wishing you a great day in the Lord, and aloha.
What if there were a place where you could discover, develop, and fulfill your dreams? That place is New Hope Christian College.
New Hope Christian College is a place where your teachers really do care about you, they want you to succeed, and they're willing to partner with you to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
The education that I've received at New Hope has really equipped me to graduate market ready.
For more information, go online to newhope.edu or call 1-800-322-2638. New Hope Christian College, a place where dreams are released.